Hey everybody, it's Michelle Fisher and welcome into A View From My Window. As always, I thank you for joining us today. Today on the show, we are talking about supported decision making. And for many families and individuals with disabilities, the issue of guardianship and alternatives to guardianship is an issue of concern. There is a growing movement to carefully consider alternatives to guardianship, including supported decision making. Why is supported decision making important for people with disabilities? How does it support helping people take more control of their lives? And how does supported decision-making work? To help us learn more about this important topic, today I am joined by Jill Smith, the ARC Advocacy Network Manager, Melissa Keyes, Legal Director at Indiana Disability Rights, Erica Costello, Staff Attorney for the Adult Guardianship Office, and Kelsey Cowley, Self-Advocates of Indiana President. I am so happy to have you here for this important topic. Now, let's start off with you, Erica, because I want you to help me to understand just what supported decision-making is and how it differs from guardianship.
Sure. So guardianship is a legal process where a judge makes a determination that someone is what's considered incapacitated or unable to make informed decisions regarding their care. And basically what the judge does is they appoint somebody to make either decisions on behalf of that person or their estate, which would be their finances. How support decision making differs is that it's what's considered a less restrictive option to guardianship. And what that means is that a competent adult can nominate supporters to assist them in making important life decisions. And these agreements are actually outside of the court's purview. And so common supporters in supported decision-making agreements can be anyone. They can be family members, they can be friends, they can be advocates, they can be case managers, or even attorneys. So the key difference here is dealing with capacity, whether the person is considered an incapacitated person or whether a person has capacity to make informed decisions regarding their care.
And Melissa, from the perspective of Indiana Disability Rights, why is the option of supported decision-making important for people with disabilities?
So when I think of supported decision-making, I really think of it as a way to accommodate somebody in making, going through that decision-making process. So when you think of accommodations that we're used to, a wheelchair to help somebody be mobile, or glasses to help somebody see. What we're really talking about with supported decision making is a way to accommodate somebody to help support them in making life decisions. So it's a really important option, A, because it keeps people out of more restrictive options like guardianship, where their rights are taken away, and it allows the person to have a greater input and self-determination over the decisions that they make in their life.
So let's talk about Jill and Kelsey. I want to make sure that you can add to that. Talk about why it's important for people with disabilities to have that option of supported decision making. And Kelsey, you are an advocate yourself. Mm-hmm. So why is that important?
Because when someone that has a guardianship is labeled incompetent, they don't get their voice out. I'm actually under guardianship right now, and it's restrictive. It's restrictive, yeah. It's almost like I can't be who I am. A lot of people with the work that I do know that I am capable of doing stuff, but my parents didn't realize that when I grew up or over time that I would gain my independence, and that's where they didn't see that in the future.
Mm-hmm.
They automatically jumped to, getting guardianship. Mm-hmm. But sheltering someone with a disability is not the way to go, because they're not going to be prepared for the future. They're not going to
I love that. Yes. Yes.
They're not going to be prepared for what the world is like on the outside.
I did research on supporteddecisionmaking.org, and I really appreciated the site. The site made the point that we all have to make decisions, and sometimes it really helps to have someone assist in helping with making decisions. Why is that important for what Kelsey was saying? Just assisting me. It doesn't mean I'm incapable of making a decision, but having the assistance to make the right one.
You're exactly right. None of us are, quote-unquote, independent. And I I have a love-hate relationship with that word because nobody is really truly independent.
Yes.
So whenever any of us are making major life decisions, we are talking to friends and family, we are looking at the internet, we are reading product reviews, we are talking to experts.
Yes.
We are gathering information in order to help us make an informed decision. And that process of making a decision is a skill that can be taught, mm-hmm. it can be learned, it can grow, and it can be accommodated.
Sure.
And I think the important thing to recognize is that it's not just you can either make every single decision, and when I say decision, I'm talking about the quote-unquote correct decision, because nobody complains when you make decisions that everybody agrees with. It's
sure.
only when you make decisions that people question, that they start to question your ability to make those decisions. But what I'm talking about is when you get to the point of making a decision, that entire process is something that can be accommodated, can be assisted, and it should, because I think when you don't look at an option like supported decision making, when you just assume that you can either make the decisions, every decision by yourself completely, quote unquote, independently, or you can't, and if you can't, then that must mean that guardianship is the only option. It really restricts somebody's ability to have that self-determination, to have control over their life.
And Jill, to her point, to have control over her life, that's what supported decision making really makes you realize how important advocacy is when it comes into, when it came into existence today even. So when people call the Arc of Indiana's advocacy network about things like guardianship and supported decision making, how do you help them?
A lot of times in the very beginning when a family's calling, we ask them to give us a little more information about the person we're discussing, sometimes involve them in the conversation. What are their big concerns? What are their strengths? What do they do really well? How can we help support them to maintain some of the control over their life? Can we use supported decision making in the areas where we see weaknesses or we feel they need a little more support? So we spin it a little bit more in terms of, what are their strengths? What positive things can we know about this person or share about this person and build on those things? And how do we best support them so they maintain the most control of their lives and still have the ability to make their own decisions with whatever support is needed? And I think that's where we start. And then, you know, if we go down the list and we're talking about how do we keep them safe if that's a concern, are there issues with money? Then where do we build additional supports if needed, if supported decision making can't do that? But many times families are unaware that supported decision making was even an option, or that they would be able to support their loved one in this manner through a team or through, mm-hmm. you know, one or two people. So it's an eye-opener for families just to hear about all the different options there are.
Well, it's an eye-opener because from my own experience, I have a disability as well. But if you're talking to me about supported decision making, I'm like, I don't want someone to make a decision for me. But when she puts it in those terms, that we're trying to help you to make the best decision possible so you can direct your own life, that makes a whole lot of difference.
Right. And one thing that's really important to keep in mind is it's no different than the types of assistance that we commonly refer to every day. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, we wouldn't be making decisions about buying a car or buying a house without relying on assistance from other people. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this type of concept has been around forever, and we're just looking at formalizing it. And really, there's a key difference when it comes to supported decision making, because you're not giving the supporter the right to act on your behalf. So mm-hmm. really, they're just assisting you with your decision-making. They're not going to be making decisions on your behalf.
What a wonderful option. And Melissa, I have to say congratulations to you because you filed a petition to terminate the guardianship of an individual in favor of supported decision-making, and you won, marking the first time since such an agreement has been in Indiana. Congratulations for that. Tell us more about that and what this could mean for the future of supported decision making in the state.
So this was part of a pilot project that Indiana Disability Rights is happy to be a part of, along with the ARC and, forgive me,
Indiana Office of Court Services.
Thank you. Used to be Division of State Court Administration, and right. That's hard for me to unremember.
Yeah.
But through that grant, we have really tried to find a way to expand the use of supported decision making. And Jamie was awesome enough to be our first participant in the project. And one of the things that we realized early on is that as part of getting supported decision making out there, there really needed to be a lot of education, not only mm-hmm. to parents and families so that they start demanding it, mm-hmm. but to the other people in the system, providers, educators, lawyers, judges. By laying that initial groundwork, that really set the stage for us to be able to successfully petition to terminate Jamie's guardianship. If we went into a courtroom cold, or if we went into a courtroom that wasn't familiar with supported decision making, and we just brought up this crazy new concept that, somebody who had previously been determined to be incapacitated is now all of a sudden going to make their own decisions, we probably would have been dead in the water to begin with. But because through this project, we were able to educate the judge, educate the guardian ad litem that was appointed, educate the guardian, educate Jamie, educate her supporters. Because we were able to lay that groundwork, we were able to be successful. And I think this is a great springboard for what we hope to do in Indiana, which is expand it to more people, more counties, getting more people talking about it, normalizing it as part of the spectrum of options that are available, so that, you know, when a family is, you know, has a kid who's 16, 17, and they're starting to talk about their options, they don't just automatically default to guardianship, but that they start to think about there are other options available that we can help support this person without automatically, you know, defaulting to the most restrictive option. So we were really excited to have that and to be a part of that project. And Jamie was a great first case.
She was. She really was. Kelsey, let's talk about Self-Advocates of Indiana and how this topic is being shared and discussed among you.
We've talked about it a lot. We're starting to now get a statement from SAI. We actually just talked about it on the partner in policy call this morning, and how we need to get a statement out saying we are in favor of supported decision making. It's sad because I have a friend that has a guardianship, but her parents won't listen to her. It's disappointing when you see that. And the parents don't even think about how it's going to affect you when they get guardianship. Reversing a guardianship is really hard. We've talked about doing the supported decision making on my end better than doing the reversal of the guardian, because that would be easier. Mm-hmm. And then that way, I mean, both my mom, my parents will be happy and I will be happy. But I think there's a lot to take in when it comes to an advocate perspective, because of the fact that people see what we're trying to do. Mm-hmm. People see what we're trying to get done. People see what we're wanting from out of this.
And we were talking about how you've kind of changed the view of judges and lawyers. When you go into a courtroom, who knows and supports that? How does that make you guys feel as far as we're getting somewhere in the legal system here?
Well, again, we're at the early beginning of this project and looking at incorporating other counties, and it's looking really good actually right now, and expanding our project into other counties and working with other judges and the expansion of this project into other counties at this time. As was mentioned, you've got to look at the issue of incapacity, and it's very difficult to terminate guardianship because of the issue of incapacity. You have to present evidence that a person who has already been adjudicated incapacitated was considered rehabilitated. And so when you're looking at the incapacity of an individual, evidence is usually presented in the form of either a physician statement or a neuropsychological evaluation or a behavioral or functional evaluation on behalf of that individual. And that's usually what is being used to make that determination on whether that person has the ability to make decisions for themselves. And oftentimes, like I said, it's somewhat difficult to terminate a guardianship, but it can be done.
Well, if someone is listening to this podcast, which parents and providers do, what would you tell them about supported decision making?
So one of the things that I would want people to know about supported decision making is that if you look at the spectrum of complete, you know, doing things, again, quote unquote, independently versus full guardianship, which is the most restrictive, supported decision making is really part of that whole continuum. And there's what I want people to get out of this is to know that there are more options available. When you are talking to your child's special education teacher or your child's doctor, and that provider says, the only way for you to participate in your child's care once they turn 18 is for you to get guardianship, I want parents to be able to say, no, that is not true. There are other options available for, you know, me to be able to participate if my child wants me to. And so letting people know that there is a range of options available, that supported decision making also doesn't have to be the final word. As somebody's symptoms progress, or if somebody's symptoms decline, or if they get better or worse, it's a flexible arrangement, because it is something that we almost reflexively do anytime we make a decision anyway. What we're really doing, as Erica mentioned, is we're really just trying to formalize that process. So when you think of supported decision making, what you're really thinking of is, how do we best support a person with a disability to be able to make their own decisions? How do we accommodate that decision making process so that, like I said, just as glasses accommodate vision and wheelchairs accommodate mobility, mm-hmm. supported decision making is a way to accommodate that decision making process. And I think when people start thinking about it in terms of that, like that, it makes a lot of sense. And I think, you know, people may not be familiar with the term supported decision making, but I think when you explain it to people, the concept makes sense, mm-hmm. and the concept is not unfamiliar from what we do through the normal human experience anyway.
Also, when we talk to families, when we're doing training, this isn't something that we just look at when someone's about to turn the age of majority. We're trying to support people in making decisions with supports as early as possible, so they get used to seeking out their own information, evaluating all the information that's given to them, so they can make the best decision to have more control over their life. We help families discover it as early as possible, let them start working now, so it's not such a shock when we're 18, 19 years old. Because it can be a shock when things change like that. But let them have a little bit of control. Let them learn how to evaluate everything that's there for them to make the best decision.
So, Melissa, since we have discussed supported decision making, and we've made strides, what are the next steps?
So, as Erica said, we're going to continue on with the pilot project. We're also continuing to seek out ways, even if Erica and I go door to door, it seems like sometimes, to educate anybody who will listen about, you know, what supported decision making is. We do take our show on the road, so if anybody's interested, we will come and talk. But getting information out there, and part of that piece, Indiana Disability Rights is working on publishing a website specific to supported decision making, and that will be forthcoming by the end of August, where we hope to centrally house links to credible resources, links to information that is Indiana-centric, so that there's a lot of great resources out there, like supporteddecisionmaking.org, that are very general, but our goal is to provide information that is specific to Indiana law. So look for that. And if anybody is interested in talking about what their options are regarding supported decision making as opposed to guardianship, they can feel free to give my office a call, 317-722-5555. We are also available on the internet at www.indianadisabilityrights.org. We look forward to trying to move this conversation forward.
Well, you all, I have loved this discussion. Thank you so very, very much for all of your work. And thank you so much for listening today, everybody. Have a great day today. Bye-bye.